Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 9, 2018. South Sudan government spokesman says the government have no political detainees in their custody.
So far we have no knowledge of anybody who is in custody. Those ones were released a long time ago when President Salva last year declared unilateral ceasefire and an amnesty to all the political detainees.
And South Sudan is warning its governors to prevent intercommunal violence in their states.
Because if the president can be taken to court, or the first vice president can be taken to court, what exempts the governor? If the governor cannot control his people, very soon a chief will be jailed and a governor will be taken to court.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Both the government and rebels loyal to Riek Machar deny holding political detainees or prisoners of war. The ceasefire deal signed in Addis Ababa last month requires the warring parties to release all political detainees and prisoners of war. South Sudan's information minister says there are no political detainees in government custody. As we hear from Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba, the government did not comment on the fate of Machar's spokesman, James Gadet, who was deported from Kenya and has been in a government detention center in Juba.
Article 8 of the Cessation of Hostilities Agreement gave the parties a deadline of January 7th to hand over political detainees and prisoners of war to the International Committee of the Red Cross. That deadline came and passed on Sunday. The agreement stipulates that within 72 hours of its signing, the parties shall submit to the ICRC a complete list of prisoners of war and all political prisoners and detainees. In addition, the agreement states that political prisoners and detainees shall be released within 14 days. In an interview with this program earlier today, South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makwey said the government detains criminal only.
The government of the Republic of South Sudan has no political detainees. And so far, we have no knowledge of any prisoners of war. People in our custodies are mere criminals who committed offenses, or they are charged according to the law. But political detainees as such, those who were detained for political reasons, we have no political detainees, we have no political prisoners.
Colonel Lam Paul, the deputy military spokesman of the SPLA-IO faction led by Riek Machar, says his group neither holds prisoners of war or political detainees.
These soldiers, whenever they are arrested, many of them, in fact, they just pledge loyalty to us straight away. So we don't have political detainees. We don't have prisoners of war with us. Whoever decides to go back to government, we always give to ICRC and they're taken. But whoever decides to stay with us, we give them the freedom.
Paul says the same cannot be said of the government. He accuses the government of holding more than 500 political detainees and prisoners of war under harsh conditions.
They have those of Dong with them. Agri-Idi was taken. Even our spokesperson is there with them. And very many others, especially Equatorian, who have been captured in Juba in relation to SPLA-IO. But we know they are not there now. Many of them have been killed. So that's why they're saying they don't have any political detainees, but they have killed all of them. We know many have been killed, especially in 2015 and 2016 during July 5.
Makwey insists the Kiir administration released all those detained for political reasons last year after President Salva Kiir offered unconditional amnesty to all rebels who laid down their arms and agreed to uphold a unilateral ceasefire.
And all these people were released. So with the current signing of cessation of hostilities, we have nobody in custody. This is why I'm saying so far we have no knowledge of anybody who is in custody. Those ones were released a long time ago when President Salva last year declared unilateral ceasefire and an amnesty to all the political detainees. And this was done. If the social media, or if those who claim to have talked to the social media have the list of the so-called of the people whom they call political detainees or as such, then let them give us the list and their whereabouts.
Within hours of signing the cessation of hostilities agreement, several violations were reported on both sides. Makwei says violations are normal, but it does not mean the agreement has collapsed. He says since the agreement was signed, government forces have only acted in self-defense when engaging rebel fighters.
Whatever violations that are committed, there is a body established already to verify the violation and to come up with a clear statement. Unfortunately, there are some institutions that decided, some institutions and organizations that decided to move ahead of time and started to condemn the two parties for the violation, which is unfair. In any violation, the two parties cannot be in violation. If there is a violation, one is in violation and the other is acting in self-defense. And when I act in self-defense, it doesn't mean that I'm in violation.
Makwei says his government is committed to restoring peace across South Sudan through the IGAD-led high-level revitalization forum. The opposing parties are expected to meet again in Addis Ababa next month to continue work on revitalizing the 2015 peace deal. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A South Sudanese analyst with the Juba-based SAD Institute says the former South Sudan Army Chief, General Paul Malong, rebelled against the Kiir administration because of rivalry between Malong and South Sudan's chief spy, Akol Kur, over resources. Jokmadu Jok says Malong has no soldiers and his rebellion might not be effective in South Sudan.
The president favors one over the other. And so the competition was for the president's favor. General Paul Malong, feeling that he should be credited for the militaries and the country's victories against the opposition, while Akol Kur wanted to be credited for being the person who's the back of the president and protecting the president. So there was that competition for favors of the big man. Now, the way General Malong was removed then was seen by a lot of people, including those people who used to be very critical of his way of fighting the war and the violations that have happened and the atrocities that have been committed by the SPLA. Many people thought that Paul Malong did not deserve to be treated this way, even though he had done a lot of things that discouraged a way towards peace.
He said he was not going to rebel, but now the government is saying he has rebelled. The question that begs an answer is, does Malong have soldiers?
No, Malong does not have soldiers at all. He has been trying to use clan or ethnic cleavages to build for himself a following within a community that he comes from, the Awil community, saying that the people of Gogreal and the people of Warap, as the former Warap state, are trying to humiliate the people of Awil by treating Paul Malong in the way that he was treated when he was under a house arrest. So he was trying to bank on that, to agitate a lot of people from Awil side to come to his aid, such that if he decides to go to war, he will have many people from the army that would join his side, including those people who had already left.
There has been a talk of, you know, private militia in South Sudan, and Malong was implicated in that. I mean, there are names like Matianga Nyor and others. I can't pronounce these names. But my understanding was that Malong was implicated for recruiting these groups. Are these groups not loyal to him?
Not at all. In fact, my understanding is that a lot of people in the Awil are very unhappy about the way that he has used these new recruits in 2013, 2014, the recruits that he deployed to Upper Nile to fight SPLA-IO. Many of them, a lot of them, were killed in that war. And many people in the Awil are not happy about the way he has put these ill-trained, young, desperate people into and made them, use them as fodder for his fire.
Since these rumors have been surfacing, Malong has not made any official statement. Is there a reason why he is tight-lipped?
Well, he did make a statement, although it was only circulated over social media, saying that the audio tape that was attributed to him is fake. and that he.
But do you believe it's fake? Do you believe it's fake? I've interviewed Malong on several occasions, and the voice in the tapes that were circulating on social media sounds just like Malong.
Yes, I don't doubt the authenticity of the voice. I'm not a voice expert or anything like this, but I think it would be extremely difficult to imitate a voice to such level of similarity. What can be questioned, of course, whether indeed he was speaking about being able to raise enough force, even though he has said to these guys that all you need to do is attack Wow and attack Juba and attack Awil, and a lot of people who are angry with the government will join. I don't think he has read the situation correctly.
That's Jock Madud Jock, director and founder of the Juba-based SAD Institute. He was speaking to me from Syracuse in New York earlier today. In the second part of this interview, which airs tomorrow, Jock talks about the future of politics in South Sudan. South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai, is warning governors and other state officials to take measures to prevent intercommunal violence or risk being held responsible for any attacks that take place in their communities. Gai is touring five states cut out of the former Jonglei state where deadly clashes have occurred in recent months. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Women's groups sang peace songs in Bor as they welcomed first Vice President Taban Dengai Sunday evening. Gai, who traveled to Bor by road from Juba, says residents of Bor must coexist peacefully with other communities in the former Jonglei state.
I've been sent again by His Excellency the President of the Republic, General Salva Kiir Mayardit. I will visit the five states of Greater Jonglei. I will go to areas of Uyui and other areas of Bia and Akobo. And I will go to areas of Fangak. And I will have rallies in most of the areas of Jonglei state. I will also go to Buma. The message of His Excellency the President and the national government is that we want our civilian to maintain harmony, peace between them.
Gai traveled to Dukpa Uyel County this morning, where he is expected to console family members who lost loved ones during an attack in November that left more than 40 people dead. 19 others were wounded and more than 50 women and children were abducted in a cattle raid-related attacks, which were carried out by suspected youth from Boma State. Guy says citizens must abide by the law.
It is unfortunate that there are incidences of violence that are happening, the loss of what had happened in Dukpa Uyel. We condemn that in the strongest term, and we stand by the aggrieved families. The government understands their suffering. We are working that those abducted children, they will be returned. We shall also discuss with the families about the lost one. It cannot be the same every year.
Guy says President Kiir has instructed the governor of Boma to return all abducted women, children and cattle within 2 months' time. The first vice president warns that state government leaders who fail to prevent their communities from carrying out attacks on other communities will be held accountable for lives lost and stolen cattle.
One day, Philip Agwer will be taken to court because he is governor of Jonglei, if he violates laws and order. Because if the president can be taken to court, or the first vice president can be taken to court, what exam the governor? If the governor cannot control his people, very soon a chief will be jailed. And the governor will be taken to court.
The Secretary General of Jonglei State, Benjamin Lem, says Jonglei State government stands ready to control its armed youth from attacking other communities in neighboring states. Lem says should any of their youth act on their own, their leaders and chiefs will be apprehended by the authorities.
Our youth are accountable to our counties and our community leaders. They will always be apprehended and they will be stopped not to do anything like that. We are a coordinated community, and we have our community leaders, and we have all the range of chain of commands up to grassroots. So the youth are also part of the chain of command. They listen to our commands and command of the local authorities.
Bor resident Makwal Paror says the national government must do more than talk about peace. He says it should move quickly to disarm civilians.
Government should not be talking fees when they have no action of disarmament. They have to disarm the civilian rather than leaving them with guns, and they think that peace should come.
Guy says government of South Sudan plans to disarm civilians to prevent any more communal violence. Parole agrees with Guy. He says civilians are tired of repeated killings, child abduction and cattle raiding. He is calling on South Sudan government to ensure that 2018 is a year of peace and tranquility, particularly in Jonglei. The deputy governor of Boma State, Omot Ogul Abai, says his government is working to restore peace between communities in Boma and Jonglei states, but complained about lack of roads and communication networks, which hinders the work of the army and the police to apprehend armed youth.
Yeah, we are trying our best since we came to the state to control these activities, and then we are talking with the youth, we talk with the chiefs, and we also trying to send the commissioners into the borders, talk with these so that they can be set, so that they stop people to going to other areas.
In 2011, more than 600 people were killed, 200 children abducted, and as many as 25,000 cows were stolen in Jonglei State by suspected cattle raiders from Boma. The pattern of inter-ethnic fighting fueled by cattle raids is also common in some parts of South Sudan. A cow is very important in many South Sudanese communities because it is a source of personal wealth, and young men cannot get married without paying a dowry of cows. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese students in Uganda want to go home and help. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there another African language you would like to learn, and why?
Swahili, because I know that's the language with the eastern part of Africa, and I have an intention to be there, especially in Kenya, so that I can be able to communicate well with them.
I want to learn Hausa because I like the way it sounds.
Ronyoro and Dusoga. They were so good. They are just interesting me with the way they speak, their language. So I just get excited.
I like to learn the Yoruba because now we have our fellow Nigerians here in Ghana. They are everywhere and they speak their language, and I would love to understand whatever they say.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's Tuesday, time for our health segment. Today we are talking about surgery care in Africa. Patients in African hospitals are twice as likely to die after surgery than on the global average, according to a new study. VOA's Steve Baragona reports.
About 1% of surgery patients in Africa die of complications. That's compared to 0.5% on average worldwide.
It's really concerning when you see how high the mortality is in Africa, considering that, you know, the patients are generally fit and they're having a lot more minor surgeries.
University of Cape Town professor Bruce Picard and a group of colleagues gathered mortality data from 247 hospitals in 25 African countries, from Algeria to Madagascar. Their findings, published in the journal The Lancet, reveal a severe shortage of African surgeons, obstetricians, and anesthesiologists.
We're between 20 and 50 times lower than what we would consider a global minimum for providing safe surgery.
Most of the patients who died did not do so on the operating table, but in the days following surgery, he adds.
We're actually failing to recognize patients who are having complications in the post-op period, and so a minor complication actually ends up becoming a major complication.
But Picard says that offers an opportunity for improvement.
We can develop a risk calculator that will tell us before surgery which patients we think are going to get into trouble.
His group is planning a study in 2019 to see if they can reduce patient deaths by focusing limited resources on patients at the highest risk. Steve Baragona, VOA News, Washington.
Still on health matters, South Sudanese students studying at a health training facility in Arua, Uganda, say they want to return to serve their people in South Sudan. The institute was forced to relocate from South Sudan to Uganda when fighting spread to Kajokeji in July 2016. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Arua in Uganda's West Nile region.
100 students, including 39 women, are enrolled at the Kajukeji Health Training Institute for Clinical Medicine, Public Health, Medical Laboratory, Nursing and Midwifery. Student Santino Dut says he wants to go back and help his countrymen once he graduates, so he is calling on President Salva Kiir and other political leaders to end the fighting.
We really need fees so that we can go back. We really have something to do to help our people, to help them out from the situation what they are now they are going through, to be in a different level.
Others like Nancy Hadija, who studies clinical medicine, agrees peace and stability are crucial if efforts to improve the country's healthcare system are going to pay off. But she says because of the dire need for health professionals, she is prepared to return home even before the fighting ends.
If this war is still on and I'd be like, no, I'm done. I shouldn't be going there. Maybe I could work here in Uganda. No, it's not fair, because I'd already put that in one of my goals, that I have to help my people, despite the fact that the war is still going on. I don't have to let my country down.
Student Emmanuel Lemi says he won't be deterred by South Sudan's poor health facilities and infrastructure, including areas that have been devastated by the conflict, because people in those areas in particular need disease prevention awareness.
There are some of these diseases that can be prevented by what we do. You wash your hands to prevent something. You take clean water to prevent something. So I really feel if they can really have this kind of talks, like on the radios, you go there and have health talk with them, I think it would also help them a lot.
Dr. Lou Louis Koboji is the Institute's founder and director. Dr. Koboji quit a prestigious job in Uganda in 2013 in order to return to South Sudan to establish the Kajukeji Health Training Institute. He says, generally speaking, the institute does not encourage its graduates to seek employment in Uganda.
Our main mission is to improve healthcare for South Sudanese by training healthcare professionals who would go back and deliver improved quality healthcare services.
So far, the Kajukeji Health Training Institute has graduated 2 batches of students, the first in Kajukeji and the second batch in Uganda. Dr. Koboji says his institute has signed a memorandum of understanding with a number of major Ugandan hospitals, including the Arua and Gulu regional referral hospitals. The memorandum of understanding allows students from the Kajukeji Health Training Institute to finish their practical courses and train at the hospitals. Dr. Koboji says the institute is largely supported by United States-based organizations such as the Segal Family Foundation, One World Children's Fund, the UK's Brickworks, and Mercy Beyond Borders, which provides scholarships to 18 female students. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Arua.
The UN Refugee Agency is appealing to the government of Israel not to forcefully send thousands of Eritrean and Sudanese refugees or asylum seekers to other countries in sub-Saharan Africa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency says Israel's policy has been in place since 2016, but Israel generally has not applied it. However, UNHCR spokesman William Spindler says Israel's plans, announced January 1st, to forcibly relocate Eritreans and Sudanese to countries in Africa or have them face indefinite detention are of great concern.
Official statements that the plans may eventually target families and those with pending asylum claims, or that asylum seekers might be taken to the airport in handcuffs, are particularly alarming. Forced relocation to countries that do not offer effective protection and the onward movement of these people to Libya and Europe is particularly worrisome.
An estimated 27,000 Eritreans and 7,700 Sudanese are currently in Israel. Since the government took over the screening process from the UNHCR in 2009, only 10 Eritreans and one Sudanese have been recognized as refugees. Between November 2015 and December 2017, UNHCR staff in Rome interviewed 80 Eritrean refugees or asylum seekers. All had been forcibly relocated by Israel. Spindler says their cases demonstrate the dangers of this policy.
Most said they had been transferred from Israel to a country in Africa and provided with a lump sum of $3,500. However, the situation on arrival was different to what most had expected, and with little further support provided beyond accommodation on the first night. They reported feeling unsafe as they were known to have money.
Spindler says all the Eritreans report they had entered Israel via the Sinai and suffered torture, mistreatment, and extortion on their way. He says the UNHCR is ready to help Israel find alternate solutions, such as legal resettlement to another country to ensure the protection of the asylum seekers. The Africans who have crossed into Israel describe themselves as refugees seeking political asylum. But Israel sees the majority as illegal economic migrants and even infiltrators. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The deadline to free all political detainees and prisoners of war passed on Sunday in South Sudan, but neither side released one detainee or POW. South Sudan Government Information Minister Michael McQuay told this show that the Kiir administration detains only criminals. An article in the cessation of hostilities agreement signed in Addis on December 22nd requires the warring parties to free all political detainees and POWs by Sunday, but both sides deny holding any. Colonel Lam Paul, the deputy military spokesman of the SPLA-IO faction led by Riek Machar, charges that the government has detained more than 500 political detainees and POWs under harsh conditions. McQuay denies it and demanded proof. First Vice President Taban Dengai is warning governors and other state officials to take active measures to prevent intercommunal violence or risk being held accountable for any attacks that take place in their communities. Guy is touring five states that are carved out of the former Jonglei state, where deadly clashes have occurred in recent months. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Yala Kitautu by Victoria Ole.
Yalla kitautu,
yalla
kitautu,
yalla yalla.
Yalla kitautu,
yalla
kitautu,
yalla yalla.
Kelli ni najere,
yalla
ni najere,
yalla yalla.
Kelli ni najere,
yalla
ni najere,
yalla yalla.
Ee ee ee.
We've been listening to Victoria Ole with the song Yala Kitautu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. We would like to hear what you think about this show. You can reach us at southsudan@voanews.com or check us out on our Facebook page. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Are you my people?